to be honest, that's happened to me a lot, where people had said to me, I love what you're doing, I'm praying for you, I'll have to find out more, we'd love to support you. Then I never heard another thing from them. So I just thought, oh, he's just being like typically polite, he can't stand, he's just socially awkward, he can't stand the silence. So I left, and Rachel said to me, my wife, who was that? I said, oh, some crank whittering on about partnerships. She said, are you going to meet him? I said, no, I'll be full of it. And then, so I just tried to avoid him after that.
but here we are. So what happened next? Welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. My name's Phil Topham, Executive Director of the FIEC. And once again, I have another Executive Director to my right, Ian Williamson, Executive Director of Medhurst Ministries. Hello, brother.
Hey, brother.
And Dan Green, who's pastor of Banstead Community Church in London. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Phil.
Now, why have I got Ian and Dan in a podcast together? Well, that hopefully will become apparent. If you've been listening to some of the podcasts we've done previously, you'll know that Ian and I have spoken about ministry in council estates, particularly, and on council estates, and the work of Medhurst Ministries that Ian heads up. Do check those out. We'll put the links to them in the bottom of this podcast. But one of the things that's really encouraged me about the work of Medhurst has been the partnership that's developed between New Life Church in Middlesbrough, where Ian was formerly the pastor, and Banstead Community Church in London. Because, brothers, this is a partnership between two very different churches. And I thought it would be great to hear about what partnership between FIEC churches in very different contexts can look like as we consider, you know, whether others listening to this podcast might want to form something similar. So first of all, just before we get into the detail of that, Dan, what made you want to do a partnership with New Life Church in Middlesbrough?
Well, I think it was more of a case of wanting to do a partnership, full stop, was really what was on our hearts. And for many years, we've been training up pastors to send out, and that was very much one of the big mission initiatives of Banstead Community Church. But for circumstances, there was going to become a period where we weren't able to do a trainee pastor. And it became a concern of the elders that all our resources were going to be ploughed into Banstead, but yet the Great Commission, it says we're to be discipling all nations. At the same time, we were becoming aware through FIEC that there was a great need in the north for gospel preaching churches, and particularly on council estates. So it was more out of a desire of what could we do to maybe play a small part in helping ministry in the north and on council estates, that we sort of looked for maybe a partnership.
So how did you two get to know each other then?
Yeah, it was when Dan creepily sidled up alongside me.
go on.
At the Hub conference. And
so that's our training conference in January, right? So yeah, you met him there.
Yeah, I was asked to go along and help out doing some of the interviews. And do you know what? Our names were called out and we stood next to each other. And Dan said, oh, we'll have to get a coffee sometime. I'd like to discuss some ideas about partnership. And I just thought he was being typically middle class, stood with some bald-headed northerner feeling uncomfortable and just blurted out this because he had nothing better to say. And I say this jokingly, but to be honest, that's happened to me a lot, where people had said to me, I love what you're doing, I'm praying for you, I'll have to find out more, we'd love to support you. Then I never heard another thing from them. So I just thought, oh, he's just being like typically polite, he can't stand, he's just socially awkward, he can't stand the silence. So I left, and Rachel said to me, my wife, who was that? I said, oh, some crank whittering on about partnerships. She said, are you going to meet him? I said, no, I'll be full of it. And then, so I just tried to avoid him after that.
but here we are. So what happened next, Dan?
Well, I invited him down to Banstead for the weekend, but he wouldn't come for the weekend. He'd only come for a Thursday, so, and for our prayer meeting. So we managed to get that. And I think the only reason he came down was because he promised his daughter a trip to Legoland.
So you go to Legoland with your daughter, but then you do go to Banstead and you go to the prayer meeting.
Yeah.
So it gets a bit more serious, I guess, then, doesn't it? Because you're thinking, oh, there might be something in this.
Yeah, I think we went to Dan's house first, and I really started to warm to him when one of his sons, I think it was Harrison, pointed to my wife's face and said, what's that big spot on your face?
Just what, like, you wanted, Dan. Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I thought that was hilarious. So I was like, oh, I like this family. And then, and just spending time with Dan and Kate and his children, was just so refreshing. There was no pretense. They were just genuine. We had a laugh. We didn't really discuss much about ministry. We just chatted about each other. And I think, oh, this guy, he's all right. He's like normal. And again, just to make you aware that the reason I was suspicious wasn't because of Dan personally. It was just because I'd spent years traveling up and down the country looking for support. I'd heard the usual, yeah, I'll pray for you, or we'd like to support you, we'll be in touch, and never heard a thing. I was tired from the ministry. I was discouraged, and I was disappointed basically at the lack of support for churches, not just in Middlesbrough, but across the country from the wider church. So I'd become rather cynical, and I'd kind of given up any hope of any church having any meaningful partner with us. So it wasn't Dan per se, it was just the way I was feeling. So when we got to his house, and I just felt relaxed, it was just friendly, it wasn't businesslike, it was just like two brothers, two Christian families enjoying each other's company. So that put us at ease before getting to the church. Then when we got to the church, again, no pretense, everyone was lovely, quite different to us, very, very middle class. I remember somebody saying to Rachel, how did it feel speaking to John Blanchard? And she was like, who's he?
So he was in your church?
Yeah, so he was a member of our church. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then at the end, Rachel said, I was talking to John Blanchard. I was like, who's he?
Wow. Okay.
So we Googled him when we got home.
So, he's written books and everything.
Yeah. But again, just to show that we were like, oh, wow, this is a church that has money, is from the South, we're very, very different to, and they've just loved us and welcomed us, and they're genuinely interested in the work. It knocked us off. So I'm not being funny, I've traveled to some churches and it's cost me more in petrol than we've received back them. We felt like an inconvenience, or I went to churches and everyone would speak to me because I was a pastor, and often I'd be asked to share a testimony rather than preach, and my wife and kids would be ignored, and for whatever reason, we just felt rather uncomfortable visiting churches. I think some of it might have been just because we felt a bit different because it was different. But I think genuinely we weren't welcomed as much as we thought we would be. And this was the first church that really like just was genuinely interested in us. And I don't think we even discussed money or partnership for the first several visits, did we?
No, I think when you came down after that for a Sunday and spent some time with us on a Sunday, one of the things we did as elders, we got you to come meet with all the elders, and really we just asked you, how could we help? And we were very conscious as a middle-class church that we didn't want to start telling a church in a very different context how to do ministry. We almost maybe went over the top in saying, look, we're not here to tell you what to do. We really just wanted to support and offer any help that we could. And you were keen, we were keen. It seemed like the friendship between us was spreading out to the church, which was really encouraging. So that by the time we had a church meeting at Banstead Community Church and said, look, we want to pursue a partnership, it was like the church were going, well, we've been expecting this. What's taken you so long? We had started off by taking an interest in them, by praying for them. And then it sort of went up to a next level when I sort of said, a great thing would be to do for partnership is if some of you maybe consider going up to Middlesbrough to see what we was like. As I was saying that, there was a couple in the church who were already Googling how far Middlesbrough was from where they were going on holiday, because they were due to go on holiday a couple of weeks' time up to the north. And actually, they were the first people from Banstead to actually go and visit that church. And so that was one of the things we wanted to start with, was rather than thinking, oh, it's all about giving money, let's try and actually become friends with one another and church to church. And so that's what started to happen. So right up to COVID, so we're probably over a course of 9-10 months, I think there wasn't a month when either someone from Banstead was in Middlesbrough or someone from Middlesbrough was in Banstead. And so that really was helpful in sort of bringing the two churches together in the early days.
So you started off with a friendship between the two of you as pastors, and then that was kind of the elders of both churches almost kind of meeting together. Then it kind of spilled over into the wider church. But it sounds like it happened quite naturally.
Yeah, very naturally, wasn't it?
Yeah, it didn't really hasn't to be forced upon our church. And I think you same was true with New Life.
Yeah, I don't think there was any particular expectations. Obviously, I knew one of our greatest needs was finance. But again, I stressed to Dan that, look, we want genuine partnerships. I'm not into just being seen as like some church coming with a begging bowl. Mm. We've got a lot to offer. We'd like to support you in ways. He had me come down and preach. Me and Nathan preached while he was on sabbatical. We've had my daughter's gone down and some of the gospel workers have gone down to help with the summer Bible schools and holiday Bible clubs. But again, I think there was just a genuine love for the Lord, for each other and for the lost. We were just in one mind missionally, I think. We had a heart. We weren't trying to build a kingdom for ours. We were genuinely interested in God's kingdom, weren't we, I think, and in each other's church and being with each other and blessing each other. And I think relationally, it does help that our wives got on and our kids got on. And I don't know, it just became an extent. The church seems like a sister church. Pretty unique. We'd never had that before. You know, we could turn up there on a Sunday and it'd be no different to turning up to New Life Church Middlesbrough.
So how have you mentioned a couple of things there, Ian. How have you developed the partnership? So you've mentioned it's gone both ways. There has been finance, but that's not the central part of it. So what kind of things have you done together to support one another's churches?
When Ian was on sabbatical during the lockdown pandemic, Nathan was taking more responsibility as part of wanting to encourage him to take a step forward, which wonderfully has happened.
So he's now the pastor of the church.
He's now the pastor of the church. But one of the things Ian got in touch and said, look, while that's happening, while I'm away, could you check in with Nathan just like during a week, just see how he's getting on? And so that was something I was able to do via Zoom. I think one of the real benefits of COVID in the lockdown, which I know is a strange thing to say, was after about 1 week of realizing, we're doing Zoom prayer meetings now, it occurred to us that, well, why don't we do a joint prayer meeting? So we started that up about the second week of the COVID and lockdown, and it's carried on since. So we have a monthly prayer meeting, first of a month. The two churches joined together, and it's been wonderful to hear news from, be able to share and receive news from one another at the meeting, to pray for one another, and like trying to take it in turns of who's leading the devotion. So really trying to share it out. So it is a genuine and partnership between the two. And it's looking for ways in which we can support one another. We're very grateful when some of their folk have come down to help with the Holiday Bible Club. And even giving of the money, like which we've been glad to do and have looked for being able to be as generous as we can be to support the work. We see that as part of making disciples in Middlesbrough. And so when someone asks me, where are you making disciples? Well, I can say we're seeking to make disciples in Banstead, but also in Middlesbrough because of this partnership. And I've tried to help the church see that. But it's our mission field has suddenly increased to 240 miles away because of this partnership we've got. And hearing news, hearing the stories of what's going on, every time they do a new venture or they see success in ministry, we get to celebrate and rejoice in that. When they have their frustrations with their building project, which has been going on the whole time of our partnership, and we can share in that frustration and pray for them. So it's been a really wonderful blessing for us as a church.
I think one of the most encouraging things was we had two female gospel workers, and the church was funding both of their positions 50% each. And then, unfortunately, one of them walked away from the Lord. She was removed from membership, and obviously with that lost the job. And I got in touch, and we've had that before. I knew it was a risk for people to invest in some of the people that we are employing, the new Christians. We, like I mentioned before, that a lot of the people we work with come from chaotic backgrounds. To be fair, the pastor was a risk for people to fund him. never mind the gospel workers. But when she fell away, I get in touch and say, look, I'm sorry, but
it's not worked out.
Yeah, the person you've been supporting, we've had to remove from membership. And they'd met her, they loved her, they were concerned for her first and foremost, for us spiritually and for us. How can they help us like spiritually and practically? But then they said, look, do you know what? We've met as elders and as a church, and we've decided what we'll do is we'll just pay 100% of the other gospel worker's salary, which again, is quite emotional for me because it prove that they got us, that this was a partnership that was deeper than somebody wanting to invest in a sure thing. And I don't know, I just, again, I mentioned in another podcast that I was seeking validation in the ministry, which is wrong. So this wasn't so much validation because I should have that in Christ, but I felt accepted. And I felt, you know what, these guys really trust us and see us as joint partners, not as the wise middle-class church helping the inferior working-class church. This is a genuine partnership. When we have the highs, we do the highs together. When we hit the lows, we do the lows together. And there was just cemented that trust, I think, between the two churches and us as friends and elders.
Dan, can I ask you, as the pastor of the middle-class church, to use Ian's parlance, what kind of things do guys in your position need to think about if this kind of partnership's going to be real, true, and meaningful, I guess? Because what I'd love from this podcast is for others to consider how they could do something similar. What do you really need to think about? What would your message be to guys in similar positions to you?
I think first, we've got to accept that if it's a different context, we don't know how to do ministry in that context. So while the gospel is the same, and the Lord Jesus will build his church, and he has given us his word and spirit, and we've got to recognize that middle-class and working-class communities are different in lots of ways. And even though we've had a partnership for a number of years now, and my understanding of council estate ministry is still very basic, and I wouldn't know where to begin if I was suddenly thrust in a church in that community. And I think it's just accepting that those who are in that community have worked on the ground sometimes for a lot of years and have put in year after year of faithful work. We've got to trust that they know what they're doing. And we are not the sort of wise guru that can be a savior to their problems. So I think first of all, we're saying let's acknowledge that what they've done, the work they are doing, and recognize that we want to bless them and support them in it rather than tell them what to do. So I think that's something that's helpful. I think it's all, like when it comes to money, I think it's realizing that it's the Lord's money. And when we give generously and we give in good faith, we then trust that the Lord will do his work with it. Yes, there could be a risk involved in it. And they do come from different backgrounds. And Ian's just said, we have the experience with one of their workers having to be removed. But actually, we just got to trust that the Lord will honour our gift, and we got to be and allow them to use it what they think is best.
I guess that's where the church partnership is vital, isn't it? Because then the church will understand the risks. Yeah. So it's all very well for the pastor saying, I understand the risks. But actually, if the wider church needs to be on board with that, is that a fair comment?
Yeah, so one of the things when we announced to the church that we were committing to supporting the two gospel workers, which became one, was we said, look, you've got to almost put to one side the middle class rules. And we generally, when we've had trainee pastors, we know what to expect. But actually, there are different backgrounds. It is more risky. And let's just be honest about that right from the start. And if it goes wrong, which it has a potential of doing so, we can just say, well, Lord, we went in it with good faith. We want to bless your people. We want to serve your church wider than this local church. And sometimes it will go wrong. But then that happens in middle-class ministries. A pastor can fall away and have to be disqualified from ministry. And we may have invested loads of resources in them. So it's no real difference to that.
We live in a sinful world. Everything's indeed a risk in that sense, isn't it? How rare, Ian, is that kind of mindset?
Well, you tell me, where else is it replicated within the FIEC? There might be others, but I'm not aware of many, if there is. I think it's very rare. I think, and it's not just across middle class to working class. I think it's churches in general are very self-focused upon their constituents, upon their church, upon their ministry, whereas I've not heard many other people. Even myself, I talk about my ministry to Middlesbrough. Dan's talking about making disciples in Banstead and Middlesbrough. So that was an area of repentance that I had to look at and think, flip the neck, Lord, I'm whinging about these middle class people being so focused on themselves, yet I'm only concentrating on Middlesbrough myself. Sorry, Lord, help me to think wider. So through that, we've started partnering with churches that are smaller than us in the UK and abroad. So again, it's just been very humbling. The partnership encourages us because it shows us where we're doing things well, but it also humbles us where it shows us where we need to improve. And I think there's prejudice amongst the working class towards the middle class as much as the other way around. And whether it's intentional or not, we all come with certain biases and blind spots. And
what does that look like, Ian, if I can put my finger on that just for a minute, those biases that you feel exist in the working class community? That'd be helpful to hear, I think. I don't think I know off the top of my head what those might be. What kind of things are you talking about?
Well, that we're the victims, that we're the ones doing, the only ones who struggle, the only ones who know hardship. The ministry's harder for us than it would be for somebody else. Yet when I've met with Dan and seen his ministry, I'm like, wow, he can only meet with people 2 weeks in advance because everyone's busy at work. We're out and meet with 20 people a day. How privileged am I to do that? So it swings around, isn't it? So the more we work together, the more we see where God is blessing us in areas that other churches aren't seeing that type of blessing, but then we're seeing where they're being blessed. And it helps you to get a better perspective, stop feeling sorry for yourself, see how God blesses and loves his church, whatever context you're in, but also highlights the sin in your own heart. And like where I was wanting the middle class church to pay more attention to the needs of the working class church, we need to do the same for churches that are smaller and less financially secure than us. But also for Dan needs prayer. Dan has family issues, personal issues, church issues. How can we be praying for him? How can we support him? I think the biggest problem that not just me, but a lot of the men that I've been working with is that victim mentality. We're too quick to talk about how tough life is on a council estate or in deprived areas whilst forgetting that God loves his church wherever it is, that God blesses his church, that even though we haven't got what we want, we've got all that we need in him. That yes, there is injustices within the church, but God isn't unjust. He's a just God who loves us and fair. And I think when you just surround yourself in this echo chamber of people who are like you, you miss out on the blessings of the wider church. We start seeing people who are brothers and sisters as the enemies. Mm. And I think that was the biggest challenge for me, my hard heart towards the middle class. And do you know what? There was some righteous anger and upset and hurt, but there was a lot of sinful pride and arrogance as well. Mm. And when you're only mixing with people like you, it's easy for that to fester. But when I'm spending time with Dan, I'm reminded, yeah, do you know what? I'm worse than most people. Yeah. So I think it's important. It's just God blesses every culture. We can see the common grace of God in every culture. And if we're only confined to one, we miss out on the blessings of God's people. And that's been the biggest thing for us, I think. Seeing the servant heart of, can I mention Phil and Anita? I just have bleep it out if we're not allowed to. But there's a couple from his church who we could ring them up tomorrow and say, would you like to help on a stall? And they'd come in, they just love us, don't they? Love what we're doing, not just us in Middlesbrough, but the whole of Medhurst Ministries and the churches that were involved. There's so many members of that church who have been desperate to help churches like us, but haven't known where to start. Yeah. And I think one of the most convicting things Dan said to me, and I'll let him go on explain why, was I think the biggest problem I had was he said to me, was, look, we know there's a problem. We've heard you that there's a problem. We just need to know, what do we need to do about it? And I think that was the convicting thing for me.
Yeah, when John Stevens was talking about how there was great needs in the UK, making us aware, I was talking to the church about this on a Sunday evening, and someone put a hand up and asked the question, well, what can we do to help? And I just shrugged my shoulders. I said, I don't know what to do. I see that there's a problem, but I have no way of actually guiding us and leading us to even playing a tiny, tiny part. And this partnership is only a very, very small thing. It's been a wonderful blessing for us as a church, but we realise that in the scheme of what the Lord is doing and the needs of the country, it's not very, it's very small, very insignificant, but the Lord has blessed it for us. But wonderfully, following that question that was asked in our evening service, we found that organically in our prayer meetings, people started praying for the deprived communities and the communities where the parts of the country where the gospel wasn't being reached, the north of England. And I think because it was led by prayer, the Lord honoured those prayers and answered it in an unexpected way. Mm. And providence meant that we couldn't do a trainee pastor, so we had resources available to think about doing a partnership. And because we wanted to be partnered with a church rather than an individual, because we wanted the partnership to be in the long term. So we could have partnered with Ian, but Ian's no longer the pastor of New Life Church. But because the partnership was with New Life Church, it's carried on with Nathan. And I think that's a wonderful way in which the Lord, in his providence, just brought this partnership together, being church to church rather than church to an individual.
Can I ask, as we come into land this last kind of 5 minutes or so, what advice would you give to others listening to this who might want to consider a partnership like it? Perhaps things they need to think about, things they've not thought about, pitfalls to avoid. How can we build those meaningful partnerships? Because not everyone's going to be stood next to each other at a hub conference and, you know, go to Legoland. And, you know, there's going to be differences everywhere. What kind of big picture advice would you give?
I think for starters, I think if a middle-class church or the more affluent church actually does the driving initially, I think that says a lot. Like Ian's spoken about how he got a bit jaded from constantly going around trying to raise support and getting nothing. Actually, let's just turn that on its head and say, actually, it would be wonderful if churches and ministries like Ian's involved in didn't have to go around on a tour to try and fundraise. And actually, they had just a groundswell of churches that are approaching them and saying, look, we want to help. Tell us how we can do that. If that was to happen, that would be wonderful. I think another way is actually, how do we connect churches that are interested in doing that? As I said, like we wanted to do it at Banstead, and it was a case of where do we start? We didn't really know. It just so happened that me and Ian were at the Hub conference at the same time. And you've just said that there's no guarantee something like that would happen. So how could that be facilitated, I think, is a long-term and bigger question that needs to be answered.
Yeah, you could start by going to www.medhurstministries.org.
Never want to miss an opportunity. Hey, but seriously, on what you've just said, I mean, our leaders' conference coming up in November is a great opportunity to gather alongside those who are doing work in areas like yours, Ian, and to make some of the running. Are there things, Ian, that you should avoid if you're trying to build a partnership like this?
I think from my point of view, partnerships need to be multi-layered. This is so much more than financial, because we were generously supported at the start and it's continued that way, but there's been times where you've had just that financial support, yet if it was just based on money and then 1 year Dan couldn't afford to support the gospel worker and the money stopped, then that relationship would end, because it's far deeper than finance. That relationship will go on regardless of the finances, and who knows, in 10 years time there could be a stock market crash and Banstead is skint and we're supporting the fans. but as we've seen with COVID, we don't know what's on the corner, do we? This partnership is for the long haul. If we see in Acts, it was the poor church stacking up financially the richer church, and that might be the case. So it has to be deeper than finances. It has to be deeper than an immediate need, and it's a gospel partnership. It needs to be to make disciples in both places of where the partnership is held. So we want to make disciples in Middlesbrough and help with Banstead and vice versa. It needs to be far more than finance. So that would be mine.
I guess FIEC can help to broker some of those partnerships, though. I mean, that's what we should be about. We've got churches all over the UK. So surely, if we're going to do what our founder, Paul Connor, said, and be an association of mutual helpfulness, which is a twee phrase, but it's helpful, isn't it? But that is, you are helping each other in your ministry.
Yeah, we are a fellowship. This is a practical way of showing fellowship. And otherwise, what ends up happening is you have fellowship with the churches that are closer to you. And often it's between the pastors who live nearby. But actually, if you're getting to know people and being linked to ministries in other parts of the country, is a real blessing to to that. And certainly for us, being in the Southeast, there's lots of good FIC churches and good non-FIC churches nearby. And it's easy for us to be so Southeast or so London and focused that actually we forget that there's a wide country that needs a gospel and where lots of great gospel work is doing. And partnership's just been one way of opening our eyes to how God is at work in our nation.
And again, I think, again, just getting back to the money side of things, is often when a small church like ours is approached, even if it's from the FIEC saying we're doing a 100-year celebration, there's some money to apply. Because we're so desperate for money, there's a temptation to make things up to get the money. So you'll make any rubbish roll-up just to get some money so you've got some money in the bank. So, and I think that's a real pressure that happens. And I think money is often wasted, whereas if people aren't under that pressure and say, look, this is going to be a long-term partnership. You might not need the money now, but you tell us in 6 months' time when you've got a decent project worth supporting. If you remove that tension of having to just make something up off the spur of the moment to get some money and just say, look, come and approach us when you need it, that would make life so much easier. It'd be God's money is stewarded better and the partnerships are stronger. And I just think it's better all around to do that.
Well, brothers, I'm so encouraged by your partnership. I think it's brilliant. I think it would be great if we could replicate it. So if you've listened to this podcast and you'd like to know more, do check out Meadows Ministries website, because there are churches there you could seek to partner with. Do get alongside guys at the Leaders Conference in November. Do be in touch if we can help broker some of those partnerships and relationships. Ian, Dan, thank you so much for joining us. This has been Independence, the FIEC podcast. If you've enjoyed it, do rate and review, and we'll speak to you again soon. Thanks, lads. God bless.
Cheers. God bless.